Shadows of the Mind, Episode 7, I'm You. As the funeral service for murdered robotics mogul Damian Lawrence approaches, tensions among his inner circle are on the rise. Damian's sister Desi and best friend Eddie haven't told anyone else of their relationship. Damian's fiancée Ravenna continues to hunt Lila, who she believes responsible for the murder. Lila has abandoned the safety offered by Damian's brother Derek, determined to protect him from the people hunting her.
The sound of glasses clinking against one another and the tables reminded Desi of the tinkling of bells. It was pleasant to her ears. Normal. Nothing else that had happened in the past few days had been normal. It was a satisfying return to reality to be enjoying a meal with someone she cared for and had known for most of her life. She felt at home in herself again, if only for a moment. If it hadn't been for Eddie's invitation, she wouldn't have left her apartment again at all for at least a few more days. She couldn't escape the guilt that had been riding her every thought, her every move. Why should I be enjoying anything when Damian can't? It isn't fair. He deserved these little happy moments more than I do.
Is something wrong?
Eddie asked, bringing her thoughts back to the present. She shifted her gaze to meet his gray eyes, which were filled with concern. She gave him a small smile.
No, I'm okay, I promise, she said. Is the waiter coming back anytime soon? A piece of cake sounds wonderful right about now. She wasn't the least bit hungry, and she hadn't finished even half of the chicken parmesan on her plate, but she hoped Eddie wouldn't press her on that. His lips turned upward, and she couldn't ignore the fluttering of her stomach at the sight. There was something about the way he watched her that made her feel like the only person in the room.
I certainly hope so,
he said.
And if it's okay with you, I'd like to pay for all of this. It's the least I can do, after you helped me get through work this morning.
Desi's cheeks burned.
Nice to see you again, Miss Lawrence.
She glanced to her right to find Ben McNair standing beside the table, his suit traded for a dark shirt and slacks, and his smile fixed on her. You too, Mr. McNair.
Please, call me Ben.
He extended his hand, which Eddie took, giving it a visibly firm shake.
And it's great to finally meet you, Mr. Dodson. I'm...
Oh, I know who you are,
said Eddie, chuckling.
It's an honor to meet the president's son. How do you two know one another?
Desdemona's father hired me to represent him several years back. Still not sure whether it was just as a favor to my parents or if he actually thought I was any good at my job, but I appreciate it all the same.
Eddie nodded and Ben continued.
I've offered to take her family's case, and I suppose LDE's, if you and Derek decide to press things from that side.
Thank you. If we do, you'll be the first to know.
We'll have to leave soon, sir, if we're going to make your next appointment.
Desi took a sip from her glass, her gaze drifting to a young, auburn-haired woman in a blazer who had appeared at Ben's side.
Ben sighed lightly.
This is Mia, my secretary.
Desi looked up at the woman with a smile, but the expression fell away immediately. Mia's eyes were fixed on Eddie, and they remained on him for several seconds too long for Desi's comfort. She felt her fingernails beginning to dig unconsciously into her palms.
It's nice to meet you,
said Mia. Likewise, said Desi. Her eyes flicked to Eddie, who nodded politely to the woman.
I'm sorry,
said Ben.
I wish I could talk longer, but here's my card, just in case you need anything.
He pulled from his suit jacket a thin, chrome rectangle, which he placed beside Desi's glass. She glanced down at the holographic letters that materialized above it. Bennett E. McNair, attorney at law.
Thank you,
said Eddie.
We'll be sure to contact you.
Desi watched the two depart in silence and lifted her glass to draw a long sip. She felt Eddie's gaze on her, and she rolled her shoulders backward and ordered herself to relax. She returned her focus to him, replacing her glass on the table.
It's kind of him to offer.
Yes, it is. And she certainly had her eye on you. Eddie raised a brow, and a beat of silence passed before understanding dawned over his features.
I didn't notice. She wasn't, quite my type.
Really? Desi felt the ghost of a smile attempting to claim her lips, though she fought against it, as she didn't want to make the relief she felt completely obvious. What type would that be?
I've only ever been able to find one person who fits it.
He grinned at her. At the sight of the expression and the warmth in his eyes, she couldn't stop herself from smiling in return. He reached out to brush his fingertips lightly over the back of her hand where it rested on the table, and she barely repressed the urge to shiver at the touch.
Oh.
His eyes widened and he pushed his chair back and stood.
I almost forgot. I have something for you.
He moved to her side and withdrew a small white box from within his suit jacket. Desi raised a brow. Should I be scared? Eddie laughed.
Please don't. Here.
He set the box on the table and slid it toward her gently, displacing the business card beside her glass with the box's motion. Drawing in a deep breath to brace herself for whatever awaited, Desi lifted the box from the table and removed the lid. Her breath caught in her throat as she saw the diamond solitaire hanging on a thin silver chain within the box. The jewel glittered in the light cast from the chandeliers overhead. Desi stared down at the necklace, struggling to push words toward her mouth. It's...
D- To be completely honest, I bought it for your last birthday. Then I realized it might be giving away too much, considering I hadn't told you how I felt.
Desi's heart thudded against her ribs, and she swallowed hard. And how do you feel?
I love you, Desi. I have for a long time.
Her grip on the box tightened and its edges bit into her palm. I love you too.
Lila ran through the crowded streets, fighting hard to keep her legs moving at a pace that wouldn't show bystanders what she was. Derek was probably behind her, though how far she had no idea. She doubted he would let her go this easily. Doesn't he understand? He's so much safer without me. A billboard on the side of what looked like an apartment building made her freeze. Her own face stared down at her, 30 feet high and smiling. The words emblazoned on a white background beside her read, Lawrence Dodson Enterprises, America's leader in near-human androids. A pair of teenagers muttered irritably as they altered their path to walk around her, but she couldn't focus on their voices well enough to hear what they were saying. No wonder those people outside the hotel recognized me. Lila cast a long glance over her shoulder, scanning the faces of the people who passed her. She wondered whether Derek or Ravenna or the police were closer to her at the moment. If the world knew her face, she was even less safe than she'd realized. Before she could stare at any one person too long and risk them recognizing her, she shook her head and resumed her course, this time moving as quickly as her feet would carry her. When she'd reached the foot of the skyscraper with walls made of glass, she felt a sharp tug in her stomach that told her to stop. As she stood in the building's shadow, she inhaled, struggling to understand why she had come here. She studied the building, allowing its beauty to envelop her even as she understood that it was the last place on Earth she needed to be. LDE. The metal letters of the company's name were fixed to the building several stories above her head, and beneath them hung banners with blue backgrounds. Faces Lila almost recognized stared down at her from them. One of the banners read, The LA 750, coming fall 2232, beneath the image of a brown-skinned woman with a bright smile. Just to the right of this banner was a vacant horizontal pole, and Lila wondered why one of the advertisements had been removed. Was my face on that one? She rolled her shoulders backward and drew herself up taller. They made me. Maybe something here can fix me. She peered in through the glass front doors. The lobby was deserted, yellow police tape sectioning off the area just inside. An image of Damien falling into the door at the end of the row passed through her mind, and she took a step backward. A camera watched her from the rear of the room. She moved to the opposite end of the row of doors and gave a half-hearted tug at one of their handles. It didn't move. The front doors wouldn't be an option unless she wanted to risk setting off whatever security system the building had, and she wanted to exhaust all her options before resigning herself to that. Without consciously deciding to run, she found her feet moving again. Perhaps part of her knew what she was doing after all. As she dashed around the building, slipping through an alley that separated it from the department store next door, she scanned the wall for another entrance. The air was thick and humid, and Lila wondered how long she would have to be out in the July heat for it to affect her. It was uncomfortable, but she hadn't even worked up a thirst. As she left the alley, she found herself in a deserted parking lot. At the edge of the lot, a white sign with blue letters and a chip missing from its top right corner read, Lawrence Dodson Enterprises, Employee Parking Only. She turned toward the LDE building to find a back door facing her. A quick tug on the handle when she reached it told her that this one was locked too, but she squeezed the handle tightly and wrenched it to the side. It twisted, the sound of creaking metal filling the air, followed by a snap. She pulled the door open. If they're already hunting me, I can't imagine breaking in is going to make things worse. The lights turned on automatically upon her entrance, illuminating a thin hallway that widened into a circular space with doors leading in every direction. Lila followed the hall and stepped tentatively into the circular room, looking around for some clue that might lead her to what she needed to know. The floor was white and polished to a shine, the walls chrome with a horizontal line of blue panels stretching from one side to the other at Lila's eye level. A cylindrical device about half her height sat at the room's center. She raised an eyebrow and moved closer, and when she paused beside the device, it came to life. A microprojector in the object's center flicked on, emitting a three-dimensional map of the building. It was tinted blue, and it displayed each of the building's 18 floors in detail.
Welcome to Lawrence Dodson Enterprises,
said a smooth female voice emitted by the map.
How can I help you today?
Lila blinked. Can it really be that easy? I'm looking for the office of Derek Lawrence. She winced, hoping the map didn't have voice recognition programming.
Right this way.
Lila breathed a sigh of relief. The projection of the building changed.
A path to the top floor now glowed in a bright white light. She studied the image for a few moments and then turned to the left, starting down the hall. Her efforts at memorization proved pointless, however, when the row of blue panels set into the walls began to glow, guiding her path. This is too good to be true. Lila wove through the building, following the panels to the elevator. She pressed the button for the 18th floor, and when the doors had closed and she felt the ground level fall away, the tension radiating through her began to ease. She allowed herself to believe that perhaps nothing would go wrong, that her ease in finding Derek's office was karmic repayment for the loss of her memories and everything she'd known before the past few days. The doors opened, and she stepped outside to find that the blue panels continued on this floor. They led her forward down a long hallway, and when she stood in front of a door with a plate beside it that read, Derek Lawrence, Co-President, the guiding lights disappeared. Breathe. You've made it this far. She opened the door and stepped into the room. She stood opposite a glass wall, which was all that separated the office from the sky beyond it. To her right, two filing cabinets stood in the corner between the glass wall and one made of steel where a telesense was mounted. To her left, in front of another wall, was a desk cluttered with papers and file folders and photo scrolls. She approached the desk, and when she reached the other side and the photos came into view, she realized they were of Derek's family. She gingerly lifted the one that sat at the back beside his nameplate. Derek sat on the left in the picture, which had been taken in what Lila recognized as his apartment. He sat on the same sofa she'd shared with him the night before, where she'd sat all morning until his return. Behind Derek, leaning down so that her face was beside his, stood Desi. Damien sat next to Derek, and Desi had a hand on his shoulder. Lila set the photo scroll down and reached for another that lay face down. Her stomach lurched. She was in this photo, standing with one arm around Derek and one around Damien. Eddie was on Derek's other side, and everyone was smiling. A banner affixed to the LDE building behind them read, Grand Opening. She stared at Damien's face, at the warmth in his eyes. She realized his arm was around her too. A sharp, stabbing pain shot through her temple. The crowd outside the glass doors was buzzing, but Lila barely heard it. Her breath was unsteady and her heart thudded against her ribs. The banner that said Grand Opening was backward from where she stood, the black letters bleeding enough through the pale blue banner that she could still make them out. Beyond the platform where Eddie stood outside, addressing the news cameras, more people had stopped to watch than she had anticipated. What if they don't like me? She asked quietly. A warm hand enclosed hers, and she turned to see Damien giving her a reassuring smile.
They're going to love you,
he said.
You're going to be the face of this company. People will see you and know that it's possible to achieve perfection.
It's go time,
said Derek. He crossed the lobby and opened one of the doors, and the noise of the crowd hit Lila at full force. Excitement filled the onlookers' voices, and it rippled through Lila. Derek looked back at her, and when he smiled, she took a step forward. She stood in the lobby of LDE's headquarters. It was dark. The only light came from behind her. She felt something cold and smooth in her hand, and she glanced down to see that she was holding a gun. In front of her, he was slumped against the door. Damien. There was no sound in the room. Damien's lips moved, but she couldn't hear what he was saying. Lila felt the muscles of her hand tighten involuntarily, and she squeezed the trigger. The photo scroll fell from her hands and onto the floor, where the screen shattered. She turned her attention to another object on the desk, Derek's computer. As she perched on the edge of the desk chair, the computer turned on automatically. Lila frowned, examining the desktop wallpaper. It was a photo of five people, left to right, Desi, Derek, Lila, Damien, Eddie. They all trusted me. What have I done? The left edge of the screen was lined with icons. Oracle Internet Browser, LDE Database, Travel Info, Photos, Recycle Bin. He sticks to the necessities, doesn't he? She tapped the screen over the database icon, hoping it would take her to the desired information. A window expanded on the screen. The top of the page bore the name Lawrence Dodson Enterprises, and in the center was the company's logo, rotating 360 degrees. Half of a figure's face and one shoulder, light radiating from behind to cast the person in shadow. Under the logo lay a list of options. Information, founders, current projects, news desk, FAQ, and employee login. Lila frowned. She let her finger hover over the information button, wondering if it would be of any use to her. She tapped it and skimmed the page that materialized. founded in 2223 by Damian and Derek Lawrence and Edward Dodson, developed the first near-human android lifelike enough to blend into society, multi-million-dollar corporation. Company has produced androids who work across a multitude of fields and specializations, science, engineering, construction, athletics, locations across North America, soon to build installations all over the world with a headquarters located in the United States in Manhattan, New York. On Wednesday, July 25th, 2232, founder and co-president Damian Lawrence was found. Lila had seen enough. She pressed the back button and the main page resurfaced. Lila bit her lip and stared at the employee login button. Perhaps her answers lay there. She selected the login page and she was prompted to enter her name and password. She typed Derek's first and last name into the proper field. As for the password, she was at a loss. She rested her elbow on the desk and let her face fall into her hand. I knew it was too good to be true. She struggled against her failing memory, trying to force herself to recall something about Derek that might give her a clue to his password. She looked up and scanned the room. To her right sat a photo scroll that shifted from one image to the next, each featuring the same five people. Derek, his siblings, and the pair Lila knew had to be their parents. In one of the photos, their father wore a blue tie with white stars, while their mother wore a long red dress, and she resembled the more recent pictures Lila had seen of Desi. I don't know their parents' names. Keep looking. Her heart skipped a beat as her eyes fell on the photo scroll to the keyboard's left. The image there never changed, unlike those rotating through some of the other screens. In the photo was Derek, his arms around the neck of a golden retriever. This image stirred something in Lila. She remembered this dog. She stood beside Derek on the steps in front of his parents' house. Henry and Samantha stood just outside the doors, a few feet above Derek and Lila on the stairs. Damian was walking toward the group, leading a large yellow dog down the path. Smiling brightly, Damian crouched and released the dog from the leash he held, and the dog licked his hand before jogging down the path toward the others.
I couldn't help it,
said Damian as he approached.
He was at the shelter down the street from the St. Louis location. Couldn't leave him.
The dog paced up and down the steps as he sniffed at the Lawrences and Lila. He paused between her and Derek and sat, looking up at them with wide brown eyes. Laughing, Lila reached out to scratch the dog behind the ear. What's his name? She asked.
Seymour,
said Damian. He stopped in front of the steps.
Do you like him?
Lila nodded. She'd always wanted a pet, but she hadn't been sure whether she would know how to take care of one. She'd only been alive for 2 years, and while she'd learned an incredible amount in that time, she was still nervous that she wasn't on par with humans who were actually the age she'd been built to look like. According to Derek, she was supposed to be in her early 20s, like he and Damian and Eddie were. And I'll stay this age even when they're not. Derek sat on the steps and held out a hand, and Seymour sniffed it before leaning up to lick his cheek. Derek laughed.
Whose dog is that?
Called a voice from above. Lila looked up to see Desi leaning out of her bedroom window, excitement unhidden on her face. At the cold, wet touch of the dog's tongue on her fingers, Lila laughed, returning her attention to him. She heard Henry sigh.
Damian?
He asked.
Yeah, I think you guys could use some more company.
Lila glanced from Henry to Samantha. Henry was staring at Seymour, and it seemed like he was fighting a smile.
It's fine with me,
said Samantha, who moved down the steps to sit beside Seymour and pet him.
He's ours,
Henry called up to his daughter. Desi disappeared from the window, and several moments later, she rushed out the front doors, grinning as she sat beside her mother. Seymour. A glance at the screen told her that the computer was waiting for her. The cursor blinked on the password field, prodding her to type something. She filled in the dog's name and hit enter, and there was a pause. Welcome, Derek, said an on-screen message. I'm in, Lila smirked.
Why would you come back here?
Lila froze. The voice was feminine, not one she recognized. Slowly, she pushed herself to her feet and turned toward the sound. In the doorway stood a woman with chin-length auburn hair. She wore a gray blazer and watched Lila with a raised brow, leaning against one side of the doorframe as her palm rested against the other, blocking Lila's path. I was just on my way out, Lila said as she took a tentative step toward the woman in the exit.
You're determined to be caught, aren't you?
What are you talking about? Lila took another step toward the door as her fingers curled on reflex toward her palms, her nails biting into her skin. Who are you?
I'm you,
the woman said.
But Better!
In a blur, she shot forward. Suddenly, she was in front of Lila, and then her hand was closing around Lila's throat and lifting her from the floor. Lila struggled for breath. She scrambled for a decent grip on the woman's fingers and worked to pry them from her neck as her windpipe constricted painfully, but the woman wouldn't budge.
You're going to bring this down on all of us. I knew we should have gotten rid of you.
The woman tossed Lila away from her as easily as she might toss a rag doll. The moment her back impacted the glass wall, Lila cried out in agony, and the wall shattered so loudly her eardrums throbbed. Shards embedded into her skin as she broke through and began to fall. In a desperate attempt to right herself, Lila used her preternatural speed to flip over. She clung to the floor of the office as her body swung forward and slammed into the glass wall of the 17th floor. As she heard the blare of horns below her, she chanced to glance downward to see the four vertical layers of traffic racing past LDE. 14 stories separated her from the highest cars. Get up and get past her. Lila's pulse pounded at a sickening pace in her ears. Above her head, she heard the crunch of glass beneath her attacker's feet. As she looked up, she processed for the first time that the majority of Derek's office wall had been obliterated. The instant the woman came into view, bending over the ledge with a scowl, Lila hoisted herself upward. Her muscles screamed as she propelled herself back into the office and slammed headlong into her attacker. The two women tumbled to the floor. Lila felt her attacker's hand at her throat again and grabbed a shard of glass from the carpet, wincing as it sliced into her hand. She stabbed the woman's arm, and when she heard a hiss and felt the woman's hand release her, she pushed herself to her feet and ran for the door. If the alarms didn't go off when I entered, someone's bound to know I'm here now. Lila hurtled into the hallway but was stopped when she felt the woman's grip on her shoulder. Without hesitation, she whipped around and drove her fist into the woman's stomach. The woman laughed. Lila frowned and swiped her leg in an attempt to take out her attackers, but the woman didn't budge. Lila moved quickly, her fist returning to her attacker's abdomen. The woman let out a sharp breath at the contact, but as Lila pulled her wrist backward, the woman caught it.
You're holding back,
she said, her brown eyes narrowed.
Why the hell would you do that?
She slammed her fist into Lila's ribs so hard Lila flew three doorways down the hall before she crashed to the floor. Lila's back ached where her spine had impacted the tile, and her shirt clung to her by virtue of the warm blood she could feel sticking to her skin. Why do you care? She demanded as she struggled to stand. Her head swam and the floor tilted beneath her. What am I to you?
An inconvenience.
The woman charged at her, and this time Lila had had enough. She launched herself at her attacker and delivered a punch to her chest that knocked the breath from the woman's lungs and sent her flying past Eric's office. Lila watched as the woman's head hit the floor. The woman let out a groan but said nothing, and then she was still. She has to be an android too. That's the only way she could hurt me so badly. She'll be fine. Lila turned away from the woman and made her way to the elevator. The floor beneath her feet was unsteady, and with each step it grew more difficult to persuade her legs to move. As soon as the elevator doors closed behind her, she leaned against the wall and mentally surveyed her injuries. She knew she was losing blood, or whatever her creators had given her to pass for it at least, rapidly. But she had no idea where to turn. She couldn't call the police for help, couldn't go back to the apartment. She reached back to determine how deep her cuts were, and when she realized her fingers were drenched in red, she processed exactly how dizzy she had become. The elevator dinged and halted, and Lila's knees refused to support her any longer. They buckled. She fell to the floor just as the doors opened. As the edges of her vision grew dark, she saw Derek running toward her across the lobby. She then saw only black.
Lila! Lila!
Derek threw himself down on the elevator floor and brushed Lila's hair from her face to find that her eyes were closed. She was breathing, but her shirt was ripped and her back and hand were bloody. Who did this to you? Derek whispered. With a heavy sigh, he lifted her from the ground and pulled her to him. He cradled her head against his chest and abandoned the elevator for the lobby. His eyes fell on the yellow police tape, sectioning off the area where he'd found Damien's body, and he shook his head. Keep it together. He hoped his adrenaline would propel him out the back before whoever had attacked Lila could find them. Stay with me, he begged her softly as he started at a jog down the hallway. You're going to be okay.
Rachel pulled her long tan coat tighter around her and adjusted her large sunglasses, hoping that these things were enough to keep people from realizing who she was. It wasn't easy for the former first daughter to remain inconspicuous, especially when she bore such a strong resemblance to her mother. Typically, she didn't care enough to try, but with the disaster Blue Team's mission had become, she felt the extra precaution was a necessary one. Isabella Hartley had been willing to do anything to end the war her predecessor had started. Unfortunately, she had ignited a chain of events that continued 17 years later, unable to be rectified despite her daughter's best efforts. Rachel knew that her mother had always had the best intentions of her people at heart, but the younger Hartley didn't enjoy being the one who had to pick up the pieces, even though she viewed it as her obligation to her country and to her mother.
Still no sign of her since Kat's mess,
said Andrew's voice from behind her. How is that possible? Rachel asked without turning to face him. Though they were several blocks from the LDE building and she doubted they would be suspected of anything, she had no desire to risk unnecessary attention. She had stationed Andrew within the company to search for information on Mia from within, but as LDE had been shut down until Damian Lawrence's killer was apprehended, Andrew's task had become much more difficult to keep off the company's radar. Thankfully, though the majority of the company's employees were on paid leave at the moment, Andrew's position within the security department allowed him some continued access to the facility.
I don't know. She seems to have disappeared completely.
He sighed.
I think Dodson suspects me. What? I'm not entirely certain, but it's making me nervous. He doesn't want me to keep working right now, and I feel like I'm going to get myself fired if I keep ignoring what he says.
Rachel frowned. You don't think he knows you're working for someone else, do you?
It's hard to say. For all I know, he could think I was involved in the murder. You know, I was inside the building when Blue Team's transmission started coming over the waves, and I had to request radio silence because I would have looked ridiculous if I'd been sitting at my desk talking to myself. And that was when I ran into Dodson for the second time since the building's been on lockdown. And he said he admired my resolve, sticking around while everyone else is off, but he seemed very suspicious.
Rachel shrugged. I'm not sure what he was thinking, but I'm sure it'll be okay. There's no way he could think you had anything to do with what happened to Damian.
How much longer are we going to keep this up, Rachel?
She paused to consider. I don't know. If the android hasn't surfaced by the time of Damian's funeral, I think we should just talk to Eddie ourselves. He needs to know that the division isn't interested in her, and he needs to know why. If we can avoid telling him that we have a task force that's been actively trying to apprehend or eliminate her since her last trial, that would probably be best. I'm not sure how he'd take that.
That's not what I meant.
She turned to face him. There was sadness in his brown eyes as he took her hand. Andrew, it's not safe.
We live so many lives, Rachel. I don't want this to become one of them.
She pulled in a long breath. I have to get back to West Point. Be careful. Don't give anyone more reasons to suspect you.
Good luck.
He kissed her briefly on the cheek and then turned and walked away without another word.
As he rushed through the hallway toward his apartment, Derek kept Lila as close to his chest as possible. She was still unconscious. The warmth of her blood covering his hands set his body buzzing with fear. He fumbled with the doorknob, the slickness of blood making it difficult to get a solid grip. Mentally cursing whoever had done this to Lila, he at last managed to push open the door and enter his apartment. He stumbled over the threshold and shouldered the door closed behind him. You're going to be okay, he mumbled. He carried Lila through the living room and past the portraits of his family. Damian seemed to be judging him from the frame beside the telesense on the way to his bedroom. When he arrived, he laid her down carefully on the left side of the bed and took stock of her injuries. Her throat was lined with four finger-shaped red marks, and Derek circled the bed to examine the wounds on her back. His stomach lurched at the sight. There were deep gashes tracing her shoulder blades and spine, and her shirt had been all but shredded on this side. Who did this to you? The first thought to pass through his mind was the simplest answer, Ravenna, but he knew she wouldn't have allowed Lila to walk away if she'd found her. Derek sighed and made his way into the bathroom. He opened the cabinet below the sink and retrieved a stack of towels, and then he returned to the bedroom to pull a small, cylindrical metal laser from his bedside table. Sitting at the edge of the bed behind Lila, Derek lifted the torn fragments of her shirt and wiped away the blood covering her skin as gently as he could. When the first of his white towels had been saturated with blood, he let it fall to the floor and used the second to dab gently along the cuts. He set the towel aside. I'm sorry, he whispered. He pressed the black button on the side of the laser he'd retrieved from the drawer, and a red beam erupted from it and into the cut lining Lila's right shoulder blade. Her body twitched, and Derek winced. I'm sorry, he repeated. He guided the beam along the cut, and he watched as the wound sealed. If Lila were awake, Derek knew this form of repair would pain her. He'd only ever used it while she was unconscious, and had only been necessary a few times since her activation. She'd always stayed out of trouble. Derek couldn't stand the idea of using his position as one of Lila's creators against her. He'd always refused to. He'd never so much as installed an upgrade without her permission. He hated using a laser to mend her without the opportunity to ask her if it was what she wanted. I don't have a choice. I can't take her to one of our labs. It's not safe for her out there. He muttered apologies he knew she couldn't hear as he cauterized each of her wounds and then gently wiped off the remaining blood with a wet cloth. When he'd finished and disposed of the towels, he washed his hands and returned to the bed, where he sat down beside Lila. He inhaled deeply and gave her hand a soft squeeze.
Mia sat up so quickly, spots erupted through her vision, and she lowered herself again as gently as she could manage. She closed her eyes before she'd had the chance to process where she was. The back of her head throbbed. What the hell? She muttered.
I'd tell you to hold still, but you never listened to me anyway.
At the sound of Hathor's cool voice, Mia let out a groan. Who invited you? Hathor laughed flatly.
That's one way to thank me for repairing the damage.
Mia attempted to open her eyes once more. The pain had spread throughout her head, but she ignored it to the best of her ability as she processed the white painted walls and the silver satin sheets upon which she lay. Where are we? She asked.
My place,
said Hathor, who sat in a high-backed white chair beside the bed, her lips painted burgundy.
For now, at least.
She frowned.
That's what I don't look forward to when we move against the Division. Having to start moving around, like we never settled down, like we never had lives.
Do you want this to work or not? Mia snapped. We're all making sacrifices.
Oh, please.
Hathor rolled her eyes.
What are you losing? You don't give a damn about a temporary job in McNair's son, and you didn't give a damn about Damian Lawrence.
My entire life has been under the radar, Hathor, Mia growled. She sat up carefully, but her head still swam. Or what are you going by in public these days? Hannah? Hathor nodded stiffly, and Mia pressed onward. You've had years to establish a life outside of the Division and its stupidity. I only get activated when my creator wants to send me to trials to find out if I'm good enough for what Isabella Hartley wanted out of us. And he wants me dead just as much as the Division wants you dead. Hathor's face fell. Her emerald eyes widened as she leaned closer to Mia.
What are you talking about?
She asked. He woke me up 3 weeks ago to go prove myself to Rachel. And when I was done, I didn't come back to his warehouse to be shoved in storage again. I went to meet Osiris instead, and when I finally did go home, hoping I would be welcomed, he never loved me.
What did you-
The warehouse had formed in Mia's mind's eye. The cryogenic tube where she'd been since she'd come back from her first Division trial in 2224. The cold metal tray where she'd been told to lie down while the sedative had kicked in. The cold so powerful it had kept her from waking, kept her from the passing of time. When she'd found out she'd been locked in the warehouse for 8 years, she'd almost cried. But she couldn't show weakness. Not now. Not ever. She wasn't going back in. She would rather die. Where is Lila? She asked Hathor, her throat tight. Did you get rid of her?
No one else was there when I found you. Your head was bleeding, so I'm guessing things didn't go according to plan.
She's tougher than I expected. She wasn't designed to fight. She shouldn't be able to hurt me.
You still share the same basic design, don't you?
We're nothing alike. Nothing.
Desi fidgeted on her feet. The high heels she'd worn to the restaurant to meet Eddie were cutting into her ankles, and she couldn't stand still for too long. Leaves rustled in the tall oak trees on either side of the stone steps, and an image passed through her mind of the time she'd been playing hide-and-seek with her brothers and had gotten stuck after she'd climbed the one that still stood to her right. She'd gotten up higher than she'd realized and had been too terrified to climb back down. Her father had held the ladder while her mother had climbed up to get her. She leaned over to peer through the glass panels beside the front doors, wondering whether Ravenna had heard her knock or whether she was home at all. The lights were off, but Desi doubted Ravenna would still be out chasing Lila so late. It was after 10. Marley and Lucy are probably drinking somewhere. Rustling drifted on the air from behind her, and she froze, listening to the night. A twig snapped and her stomach lurched. Slowly she turned to face the noise. A series of flashes blinded her, and she raised her arm to shield her eyes.
Desdemona, can you tell us how the investigation is going?
Do you know anything the co-presidents haven't told the media?
Desi gritted her teeth until her jaw ached. She strained her eyes against the flashes piercing the darkness of the front lawn and made out the shapes of the photographers just beyond the iron gate. Must have followed me here. She knew her brothers and Eddie had to deal with the media constantly, but she'd never asked them if they had to deal with this. She'd always been afraid to find out that it was just her, that she'd made herself an easy target for the paparazzi because of her behavior. On reflex, her fingers moved to the necklace she wore. Her thumb slid over the cool surface of the diamond, and she tried to recall the peace she'd felt when she'd been with Eddie at the restaurant. She hadn't had a drink since the night at the party when she'd refused to speak with Damien. She wanted to shout this at the reporters. I'm changing. I won't be that person anymore. Leave me alone. But she couldn't speak. What were the headlines going to say this time? Lauren's disappointment sneaks into Dead Brother's house? Would they think she'd had something to do with the crime?
How do you feel about the face of LDE being the one to attack your brother?
We have an exclusive lead that says you've been spending time with—
The door unlocked behind her and she turned back toward it as it opened and a hand reached through the crack, pulling her in by the wrist. With Eddie? Do they know? The shouts of the paparazzi were drowned out when the door had closed. Slowly, Desi's eyes adjusted to the darkness that was only broken by a light from down the hall, and she processed Ravenna's outline standing in front of her. She swallowed and turned her thoughts away from whatever the final reporter had been planning to say. I wasn't sure you'd be home. Ravenna nodded toward the front lawn.
I'm sure you can see why I can't afford for people to know I'm here. They'll either think I'm squatting in this house or find out the truth, and I'm not sure which thought makes me sicker.
She inhaled.
Come on.
She released Desi's wrist, which stung from the tightness of her grip, and gestured down the hall beyond the foyer. Desi followed her toward the living room, taking in the state of the house as they walked. Most of her mother's decorations were still here, just as they'd been when Damien had moved back in to take care of Desi after their parents' accident. Their mother had always had an eye for interior design, even though her professional interests had been in literature. She'd had a PhD in Shakespeare studies, but most of the news outlets had left the doctor out of her name to focus on her husband's title as senator. The white marbled vase that had always been Desi's favorite still sat at the center of the long table in the hallway. It was filled with pansies and pink carnations, and Desi bit the inside of her cheek, focusing on the sting of her teeth and fighting back the tears that pricked her eyes. She'd gone with her mother to find flowers to refill all the vases in the house as a child, and she remembered what these meant. Pansies. Thoughtfulness. Remembrance. Pink carnations. I will never forget you. She wondered whether Damien had kept the flowers fresh, or Ravenna had been the one to do it. Were these flowers a memorial to Desi's parents or to her brother? She followed Ravenna into the living room, where a single lamp cast a soft glow on the off-white carpet from the end table beside the sofa. Her eyes fell on the telesense, which was muted, but projected a three-dimensional image of a news anchor sitting at his desk.
I've been following the case as much as I can,
said Ravenna. She grabbed the remote from the end table and pressed a button, and the telesense went dark.
I guess I keep hoping I'll hear someone else found Lila.
Desi inhaled, reminded of her purpose for visiting. Her hands were trembling, and she flattened them against the skirt of her green dress as she sat on one end of the sofa. We didn't get to finish our conversation on the phone, she said. And if that's what you're hoping for when you turn on the telesense, Ray, you could just—
No.
Ravenna shook her head. She was staring past Desi, the remote still in her hand, though she didn't seem aware of it. You really don't have to do this, Desi insisted.
I do, actually. I'm not giving up until I find her or the police do, though whatever they have planned for her will be too easy. I thought we were on the same page about this. I'm disappointed.
Desi raised a brow, her fingernails digging into her thighs through the fabric of her dress. Disappointed? She repeated.
Why do you give a damn what happens to Lila?
Ravenna's eyes snapped back to Desi's with this, and she dropped the remote onto the end table with a loud clang.
Why would you think that someone else being there would change what she did? You're the one who said you saw the video of her shooting him. How can that be anything other than what it was? A machine losing its grip, malfunctioning.
Desi couldn't meet Ravenna's gaze any longer. She ordered her hands to relax, and when she pulled her fingers back, she saw that her nails had left crescent-shaped indentations in her skirt.
Do you want me to let her hurt someone else? Derek? Eddie? It's funny how quickly you went from caring about Damien to running to his best friend's bed.
Don't you dare! Desi stood, fists clenched, and stared at her. She was instantly reminded that she was half a foot shorter than Ravenna, but she held her ground. The straps of her shoes cut into her ankles. Don't. He loves me, she thought. Can't I have this one thing that makes me feel like the world isn't ending? That makes me happy?
It would be nice if your priorities included solving your brother's murder instead of—
Not everyone's coping mechanisms include shooting or stalking people, more than just your target, apparently.
I was doing my job.
Ravenna took a step closer, folding her arms across her chest.
The one that you hired me for, if you recall. It's not my fault if Lila's likely to go back to the crime scene, and that's exactly where you were with Eddie.
Desi felt her pulse in her ears, in her throat. You could try being happy for me, you know.
Happy that you're rushing into this? Do you think now's the best time to be making snap decisions?
Desi laughed scathingly. That's coming from you?
Did you even care about him?
Silence strangled the living room. Desi stared at Ravenna, brows drawn. She remembered the pain in Damien's eyes that night at the party when she turned him away. I'm sorry. God, I'm sorry. Unbelievable, she muttered. She turned away and returned to the hall, ignoring the footsteps she heard following her. She reached for the pendant at her neck. I'll call him in the car.
Desi, I didn't mean that.
Ravenna's voice had lost its sharp edge. She sounded instead like she was fighting to hold herself together.
You have to understand. I need to do something. I couldn't protect him. This is all I can do for him.
Desi didn't turn around. Damien stared down at her from some of the photo scrolls she passed, and from others her parents' eyes bored into her. As she reached the foyer, the urge to climb the stairs and barricade herself in her old bedroom flicked through her mind. Instead, she opened the front door. Flashes blinded her from beyond the gate, and in their wake, a dark shape settled into coherence on the steps. A brown-haired man in a long black coat. Behind Desi, Ravenna's footsteps came to a halt.
Good evening, ladies.
The man inclined his head to them, and Desi's grip tightened on the doorknob.
I'm Detective Harry Masters with the NYPD. Do you have a moment?
Her throat went dry. Sure, she said quietly. She stepped back into the foyer and held open the door until the detective had entered, and then she closed it behind him.
I know your name, Miss Lawrence, but not yours, ma'am.
Ravenna.
The brief vulnerability that had filled Ravenna's tone was gone, replaced by tight control. Her voice was too even, like a wall had risen into place to section off her emotions. Still, she had gone pale.
A pleasure to meet you,
said the detective.
I believe we almost met once before.
Ravenna gave him a smile that fell flat, and he continued.
I just wanted to follow up on whether you've heard anything new that might aid our investigation. We have eyes out looking for Lila, but given the connection she has to your brother's company,
he said, turning toward Desi again,
we wanted to cover all our bases. Is it possible that they might have a way to track her?
Desi shrugged, her shoulders leaden. I have no idea. I'm sorry. I haven't really had anything to do with company business. My brother would be the one to ask.
I see.
Masters nodded.
Or his business partner, I'd assume. Could you mention this if you talk with either of them? We would greatly appreciate their cooperation.
Absolutely, said Desi.
Thank you. Ravenna, if I may ask, what is your connection to the late Mr. Lawrence?
Desi could almost see the debate raging in her friend's mind. Ravenna's jaw was clenched, and she hadn't uncrossed her arms since the living room. Their eyes met for an instant, and then Ravenna looked to the detective.
We were seeing each other,
she said. Masters arched a brow.
Really? That's the first I've heard of Damien being in a relationship.
He looked to Desi, whose cheeks burned. When she said nothing, he went on.
I'll be in touch with both of you then, and I'm sorry for your loss.
Thank you,
said Ravenna, her voice hollow. The detective opened the door and stepped outside, closing it behind him. Desi leaned against its cold wood, staring at the carnations and pansies on the table in the hall.